They were all quiet that night, in the unseen shadow of the monoliths. In the morning, Temeraire said, "Lawrence, Lawrence, there is another one, over there, look." And Lawrence, rising, saw one last monolith standing at a distance, alone, wholly alone, even without a separated hillock for company, pale and palest orange cream in the early sunrise. And then Temeraire said slowly, "Is that a dragon?" Iskierka roused up, looking, and Caesar said, "Well, what else would it be?" To be glimpsed at this distance, standing beside the monolith and casting a shadow against the smooth red wall of wings outspread, huge wings, even half furled, and there were tiny dark figures of men to be glimpsed moving around the dragon. There were bundles upon the ground, bales tied up with string, boxes which they were taking off the beast, and still others, smaller bags, were going up to be stowed in replacement upon the dragon's back. Iskierka said, "Why, ever are we only sitting here? Let's go and have a look and see if it is seen." "Oh," Temeraire said, "the egg, the egg!" And indeed, a round, swaddled bundle was being handed carefully up to the men aboard the dragon, easing into a sling across its breast. Lawrence had barely a moment to seize upon the chain of Temeraire's breastplate and get himself latched on, as Temeraire lunged aloft in a burst of speed, Iskierka with him. They had not been seen, Lawrence thought, by the company on the ground near the other monument. There was no visible hurry, no move to self-defence. Instead, the strange dragon rose and leisurely unfurled its wings the rest of the way, going on and on and on, twice the length of its body and more, and with a tremendous spring of its hindquarters was aloft. One wing stroke, two, three, and then it spread those wings and was swinging away to the north, gliding on the air. "Come back!" Temeraire called, flying quicker. "Stop!" And he paused, hovering mid-air, and began to draw in his breath, his chest expanding with a divine wind, that shattering roar which should reach even across that distance. "Temeraire," Lawrence said sharply, "Temeraire, you ought not! Your throat is not—"
"Hurry, hurry!"
Iskierka said, circling impatiently. She could not get into its path.
"She's getting further away, and with the egg!"
Temeraire flung back his shoulders and pulled in one more heaved breath, and then he opened his jaws and roared. And broke, the thunder barely begun, and the resonance dying in his chest, so Lawrence felt the tremors come rippling through the flesh. Temeraire's voice cracked like strings upon some instrument breaking, and he clenched upon himself, coughing, coughing, racked and gasping, and he sank abruptly to the sand, his head bowed forward over his breast. Part 3 Chapter 13 They gave chase anyway. Quilingile and Caesar left to trail behind, the men packed into the belly netting with haste. Temeraire and Iskierka stretched themselves lean and straight, and flew, at the limits of their speed. They made progress. Little by little the dragon grew larger in Lawrence's glass as he watched, the immense wings protruding past the edges of the lens. Onward through the panting heat of the sun, always keeping the dragon in their sight. Then the dusk, a welcome relief, but there still might be no respite. Their quarry did not stop to rest, so neither could they. The night came on, and the moon spilling silver. Lawrence had to struggle to keep his eyes on the dragon now, a moving ink blot crossing the stars, and still it did not pause. The wings scarcely moved, one beat or two now and again to catch a draught of wind and otherwise nothing, like one of the great seabirds, an osprey or an albatross, hanging peacefully aloft and more at rest in the sky than on the ground. It was drawing away. Temeraire's breath laboured more gratingly than before, and Iskierka's speed was dying. They had flown already a long day, and without halt for anything but a little game snatched on the wing, a few gulped swallows of water at a creek.
"There's another!" Granby said at last, his voice faint but clear across the gulf of the empty air,
and Temeraire and Iskierka landed by the gleam of water to drink, their legs trembling and wings drooped nearly to the ground. Granby leapt down.
"Mr. Forthing," Lawrence said quietly, "let us disembark and see about a camp. By those rocks, if you please, clear away from the water."
"Yes, sir," was all Forthing said. Failure lay heavy upon them all. Temeraire and Iskierka did not speak a word. They drank heavily and thirstily, and fell upon the sand asleep as soon as they had been unburdened. Forthing marshalled the aviators, and they formed a phalanx of pistols and knives, bristling, while in that shelter the convicts hastily filled canteens and jugs, and they all drew back to the security of the rocks to eat their dry biscuit and a little hot tea.
"Do you know the worst of it is? I don't think they were even trying. I don't know that they ever saw us,"
Granby said tiredly, stretching his legs one after the other out and then in again, working out the stiffness of nearly 20 hours aloft. Lawrence did not yet trust himself to sit at all. He thought, once he had gone down, he would not come up again very easily.
"No," Lawrence said. "The crew all kept below and out of the sun, and so far as I saw them, they were sleeping. The dragon did not look around once."
He shook his head.
"She might have been sleeping on the wing herself. I have known Temeraire to do it, on a long flight."
"Half sleeping, anyway,"
Granby agreed.
"Did you see those wings? I suppose she could go around the world on them twice if she wanted to. I've never seen the like. That is no feral beast. That's breeding, if you please, and I should like to know what they have bred her out of, when we haven't seen a single other dragon anywhere in this country."
"Their own lack of concern argues there may be none to be seen," Tharkay said quietly. "They did not see us, because they did not look. They did not imagine any pursuit."
"You think they have her from somewhere else?"
Granby said.
"I suppose there might be something like her in Java, with all those islands to fly amongst. But how we have missed ever seeing one of them, I would like to know. I suppose I wouldn't value an egg of hers much over 500,000 pounds.
"I should value more,"
Lawrence said, looking over at Temeraire, so exhausted his head had fallen to one side, and he had not stayed awake even to have his muzzle cleaned of the red dust of their travel,
"some way to catch her up."
The quarry already lost, they waited the next day until Caesar caught them up, himself exhausted and deeply disgruntled.
"Well," he said, "and you haven't got the egg back, with all this mad peltering, and meanwhile I've had a slog on all day with this lump hanging on to me, and he has eaten everything."
Kulingile ignored him in favour of swallowing yet another kangaroo, nearly whole. Caesar's complaint was not without some justice. Kulingile had grown visibly in the short span of their absence, and would have made an increasingly heavy burden. Caesar had made by now some 8 tons in weight, but Kulingile bid fair to make near enough a ton in weight himself by the end of the day.
"I will not have Caesar carry him again," Rankin said. "We are not going to stunt his development to carry a spoiled beast along."
"I have said I am sorry," Kulingile said, piping, "but I cannot help it. I am so very hungry. I think I might fly today, though, and then I need not slow anyone down."
"I don't see why you should fly today, when you did not fly yesterday or the day before,"
Iskerka said dismissively,
"so it is no use saying anything like that, but I will carry you, since I'm not a complainer."
Kulingile looked at Iskerka's bristling sides a little sadly, and it did prove something of an awkward puzzle to fit him aboard, as his own armament of spikes was by no means insubstantial, and were beginning to harden into solid horn, so that as he squirmed into position they clacked noisily against Iskerka's own.
"That will have to do," Iskerka said. "Now strap him down, and you had better not squirm."
Dorset climbed out of Temeraire's throat after a final inspection.
"I can hardly overstate the damage. There are burst blood vessels throughout, and what blisters were half-healed are now raw. It was wholly inadvisable."
Lawrence nodded, but only briefly. There was no sense in dwelling on what was done.
"What would you recommend?"
"Rest," Dorset said. "Rest and a soft diet of fat salt pork. But under the present conditions I must settle for absolutely no exertion of the throat. I will not answer for the consequences should he attempt to roar again until he is quite healed, and if it can be helped, he ought not speak at all."